I have to be one of the few people in Las Vegas that takes a 5-hour nonstop flight to get in here at midnight last night and will be on the plane at 12 noon today out of here. This is a wonderful city, and world-class entertainment, which is here, and if you can avail yourselves of the other activities, the shopping, the outdoor events, I mean, the beautiful golf courses. I heard some of you talking about golf courses here, that you may be going to those a little later. I probably would not join you on the golf course. I've tried the game. I remember on one particular golf course where we had a caddy, and about the third hole, I said, you know, I would move heaven and earth if I could play this game. He said, well, sir, you've certainly moved earth. And a few more holes later, I said, I'm kind of surprised in the condition of the course with its reputation being so positive. He said, sir, we left the course about a quarter mile back. And then I became distracted. I said, why do you keep looking at your watch? He said, it's a GPS. You know, when we finally got to the 18th hole, I said, you know, I'm a kind person, but you have to be the worst caddy in the world. And he said, no, sir, that'd be too big a coincidence. I still gave him a tip, and he said, what's this, hush money? Well, I want to thank you very much for inviting me back, because I was with you almost exactly to the day 1 year ago. During this past year, we've had good news and we've had some bad news. But fortunately, the good news absolutely overshadows the bad news. The bad news is that the historic drought continues in the Colorado River Basin with no sign of ending. The good news is that we have achieved remarkable victories in the basin that chart a course for the future through times of drought and surpluses. Landmark accomplishments have changed for better the way that we manage our water, providing more security, more transparency, and more flexibility to all 7 states in the basin. Last year, I challenged you to work together to resolve the water issues of the basin, rather than force me as water master to unilaterally intervene or to have a federal court decide your future. You rose to the challenge in impressive fashion, and I applaud you for that. This is truly a historic moment. That's why I wanted to be with you personally. As the Colorado River navigates a 1,500-mile journey down mountains, through canyons, and across desert landscapes, you have navigated the shoals of history. You've steered around the cataracts and sharp boulders of litigation and acrimony. You've found the serene waters of partnership and cooperation. This is the most important agreement among the 7 basin states since the original 1922 Compact Act, which was an extraordinary achievement. It was not easy reaching this day. A couple of times, we saw the white water churning under our keel, threatening to capsize our vessel. But we stayed afloat. We reached the goal. In doing so, we provided a course for the rest of the country and other areas that are facing the similar challenges that you are. Something happened to me recently that illustrates the full impact of what you have accomplished here. One day, early last month, I was called to the White House to brief President Bush on the devastating fires. The Santa Ana winds were just really whipping those flames. At the time, the fires were still raging and our brave firefighters were struggling to contain them. At 9 a.m., we met in the Roosevelt Room. I brought him up to date on the horrific fires that ultimately displaced close to 1 million people and destroyed thousands of homes in California. I know that some of you in this room were touched by the impact of these fires. They demonstrated how powerful the forces of nature can be. At 10 a.m., we went across the hall for a cabinet meeting that was scheduled. It was there that I unexpectedly received a new assignment. I planned to go to California to continue our work on the fires, but I was told instead to go south to talk with the governors of Alabama, Florida, and Georgia. A record drought has struck the southeast. The water war was on the verge of breaking out among the states. It's a situation that any Westerner will recognize. Accusations, litigation, trading words through the media. You know the atmosphere. The president's senior staff predicted that when the fires in California were out, that the next big issue that was going to be front page was to be the drought that was now hitting the South. The president gave me the assignment because I've been a Western governor, and because as Secretary of the Interior, I have the experience of being water master here on the lower Colorado River. And like any Western governor, I've dealt with my fair share of water fights. I know about water systems, water rights, water masters. As I noted last year, we negotiated the largest water settlement in Idaho's history with the Nez Perce tribe, ending decades of bitter litigation. In fact, anyone in this room can look an Eastern governor in the eye and say with empathy, we've been there, we've done that. But this is new for the South. You want to talk about water issues, take a look at the Colorado River. If the seven states in the Colorado River Basin can get together and work out a deal, then surely anybody can. So I went south, and I spoke to the three governors individually. And what I told them was exactly what I told you in my speech last year. You can fight a war, and someday, after years of acrimony and litigation, a federal judge will declare a winner and a loser. But even for the winner, it will be a pyrrhic victory. The cost of the battle will be greater than the fruits of success. I told them, now is the time to sit down with your neighbors and to work out a solution. There'll be no true winners unless everyone gets something and everyone gives up something. I'm sure all of this sounds very familiar to you. The message had the desired effect. The governors then came to Washington, D.C. We worked out a preliminary agreement, a way for us to at least continue discussions. The president's staff was right because it was the next big story. In my office, when we came back with the governors, were 18 television cameras. It was covered live on CNN. It was piped live down into the South. USA Today, the newspaper the next day, the headline was, Bush scores water deal. Unfortunately, the stories about drought and water wars aren't going to stop anytime soon. Let me read you some of the headlines from around the country. CBS News reported, quote, Lake Superior is disappearing. Another headline, drought leaves livestock hungry, farmers hurting. Channel 13, Birmingham, Alabama. River drying up fast, Rexburg Standard Journal, my home state of Idaho. Texas faces daunting challenge to maintain water supplies. Associated Press, Lubbock, Texas. The Council of State Governments issued a report recently that concluded, and I quote, the water wars have spread to the Midwest, East, and South. Water conflicts are occurring within states, among states, between states and the federal government, and among environmentalists and state and federal agencies. Everybody is talking about drought. And it's not just here in the Colorado River Basin or just in the United States that we're talking about drought. A couple of weeks ago, I traveled to Cape Town, South Africa to lead the U.S. delegation to the 2007 Ministerial Summit of the Group on Earth Observations. The Group on Earth Observations is a 73-nation partnership that President Bush helped launch 4 years ago. It is focused on helping countries to better share data from the weather satellites and other Earth monitoring equipment. By sharing data, we can get a better scientific picture of the forces that are shaping the Earth and respond more effectively to natural disasters, ranging from floods to hurricanes to tsunamis. This international partnership holds great promise for more effective management of the world's fresh water. Unlike the Colorado River, where every drop of water used is quantified, measured, reported, many areas of the world have little ability to monitor what happens to the water. They can use satellite imagery to monitor the water, a first step in reaching the goal of sustainable management. Throughout the Cape Town meeting, one issue kept surfacing. And you know what it was? Drought. We're seeing devastating droughts in many parts of the world. When I visited Australia last spring, for example, I learned that it is in the middle of one of the worst droughts in its history. In some developing countries, drought may contribute to chronic food shortages, which may lead to famine. I'm sure we all remember the Big Blue Marble, a famous photograph of Earth taken from space in 1972 by the crew of Apollo 17. What a wonderful image. Our beautiful blue and green planet floating alone in space. The only home our species has ever known. The place where all of human history, so far as we know, the history of life itself has taken place. What about that photo, though? Well, when it was taken, our Earth was a life support system for about 4 billion people. Today, within just one generation, that same Earth supports almost 7 billion people. By 2050, that number is expected to grow to about 9 billion people. These billions will be our heirs, our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren. All of these children will need water. And yet, on a planet that is two-thirds covered with water, many areas are suffering from a chronic shortage of fresh water. In the words of the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. Finding the water to quench the thirst of billions of people, to grow the food to feed them, to produce the electricity to run their economies, to conserve their land and its wildlife, that is the challenge of the 21st century. I was pleased to be able to report to the United States that the United States and Canada and Mexico have joined forces to develop the North American Drought Monitor Program. This partnership will generate better data about drought conditions on our continent and help us manage water resources more effectively. I believe it will become a model that other nations can use in their particular situations. Unfortunately, the drought situation both here in America and around the world threatens to get worse. Here in the West, for example, runoff in 5 of the 7 Colorado River Basin states is projected to decline by more than 15% during the 21st century. If the basin warms and evaporation increases, we could face a situation in which the amount of precipitation we're receiving today produces significantly less runoff in the future. Imagine this happening across the country and around the world, and you see the challenge that is facing all of us. This is why what we have done together here in the Colorado River Basin is so extraordinarily important. In the past 7 years, the management of the Colorado River Basin has been a top priority of the administration. Together, we have proven that through cooperation and through partnership, we can successfully manage a river that meets the water and power generation needs of millions of people, and it irrigates one of our most important agricultural breadbaskets. We've done this during a period of sustained and unprecedented drought. Look at the list of accomplishments. In 2001, the interim surplus guidelines. In 2003, the California 4.4 settlement. In 2004, the Arizona Water Settlements Act. In 2005, the Lower Colorado River Multi-Species Conservation Plan. In 2006, the preliminary agreement on the shortage guidelines and coordinated operations of Lake Powell and Lake Mead. We had enormous momentum going into 2007 to secure a future of cooperation and partnership in this basin. But we also faced significant risks. When I spoke to you a year ago, I challenged you to follow four principles. First, cooperate, don't litigate. Second, seek creative solutions to the challenges that we face. Third, hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. Prepare for continued drought. Fourth, and most important, don't fumble the ball in the red zone. Don't march down the field only to drop the ball on the 1 yard line. You need to punch it across the goal line. How'd we do? Well, today, I'm pleased to say that 2007 has been the best year yet. This is a landmark year by every measure. First and foremost, we reached final agreement on the coordinated operations of Lake Powell and Lake Mead and on the shortage guidelines. For the first time since 1922, all seven basin states have reached an agreement on the management of the Colorado River. This is a triumph of federalism under our Constitution. It's a victory for both the states and for the United States. This is an agreement to share adversity. It is easier to be gracious when you have a surplus. It's far tougher in a time of scarcity. Sharing adversity is what good neighbors do, and you are good neighbors. During the process of reaching this agreement, we saw a remarkable consensus emerge in the basin among stakeholders, including the representatives of the seven basin states. This consensus had a number of common themes: encouraging conservation, planning for shortages, implementing closer coordination of the operation of Lake Powell and Lake Mead, preserving flexibility to deal with further challenges such as climate change and persistent drought, implementing operational rules for a long but not permanent period in order to gain valuable operating experience, and continuing to have the federal government facilitate but not dictate informed decision making in the Colorado River Basin. The detailed technical work by the Bureau of Reclamation to identify options and facilitate solutions during this process also is a key element in our shared success. The Bureau's technical staff, people you know like Terry Folt, Tom Ryan, consistently produced accurate, timely, and transparent information for all the stakeholders to consider. The level of trust they generated in this process was a key catalyst for success. I met with the Bureau of Reclamation team a few moments ago. Thank Bob Johnson and the team for what they've done, because they're part of this. When I sign the record of decision in just a few moments, we will adopt four key elements of river management. First, the new guidelines establish rules for shortages, specifying who will take reductions and when they take them. This is essential for prudent water planning in times of drought. Second, the new operational rules for Lake Powell and Lake Mead will allow these two massive reservoirs to rise and fall in tandem, thereby better sharing the risk of drought. Third, the new guidelines establish rules for surpluses so that when we are blessed with ample runoff, we'll have rules in place to distribute the extra water. And fourth, the new rules will address the ongoing drought by encouraging new initiatives for water conservation. Together, these guidelines put the entire basin in a much better position to deal with the impacts of both wet cycles and dry cycles, droughts and surpluses. I'm particularly impressed by the innovative approaches that you've taken to conserve water, especially the construction project known as Drought 2. The project will be located in California, but is being paid for by Nevada. It will create a small but an important reservoir to conserve additional water for Nevada's use over the next 2 decades. After that, the additional water will benefit all state users in the lower basin states. This is truly an innovative example of cooperation among states. It's an example we can use time and time again. A win for everyone. It's an idea that may help other states. I was impressed with other conservation measures. For example, the agreement allows water users to obtain future credit for conserving water and leaving it in Lake Mead. It also sets up a framework to allow cities to contract with willing farmers to temporarily fallow fields in dry years while respecting the basin's agricultural heritage. As these conservation initiatives move forward and new ones are developed, we'll review them through a transparent process, and that's important. That means that as we're reviewing them, you'll have the opportunity to review them as well. Perhaps most important for the long term, the record of decision activates a legal agreement among the seven basin states that contains a key provision. The states are committing themselves to address future controversies on the Colorado River through consultation and negotiation as an absolute requirement before resorting to litigation. You realize how important that is? I'm convinced that 50 or 100 years from now, the people of the basin will look back on 2007 in the same way that they do on 1922. That's why this is truly historic. That's why every one of you that has been involved with this deserves enormous credit, and you should be extremely proud of what you've accomplished. I'm also convinced that as other states and other countries struggle to resolve their water issues in the coming decades, that they'll look to this agreement as a model, a way to embrace consensus rather than conflict, to conserve and share water rather than fight over water, to ensure that everyone walks away from the table a winner. Your success already has attracted a lot of attention around the globe. For example, this week's edition of The Economist magazine reported on this agreement to its readers around the world. Representatives at a recent meeting of the World Bank expressed interest in the innovations that are contained in this agreement. The record of decision was our most significant accomplishment in 2007, but it was not the only one. We resolved all the litigation issues surrounding the All-American Canal, the lining project, a key element of the 2003 California 4.4 settlement, is now back on track. We're working with Mexico to resolve cross-border water issues. In August, I met with Mexican Ambassador Arturo Zurcan, and we issued a joint U.S.-Mexico settlement on Colorado River cooperation. The joint statement reflects both nations' commitment to identifying solutions to stretch limited supplies of water, especially during this historic drought. Before I left Washington yesterday, I signed documents that complete all of the requirements necessary to put the Arizona Water Settlement Act into full force and effect. This is yet another historic milestone. This act will provide benefits in Arizona and New Mexico and represents the largest Indian water rights settlement in United States history. It's an extraordinary accomplishment that required enormous effort by the state of Arizona, our tribes, local water users, and the federal government. I applaud all of you who spent the years and, in fact, decades working on this. I don't have to tell you, however, that for all of our success in 2007, we must continue to be vigilant. We still have outstanding issues such as the adaptive management of Glen Canyon Dam. No doubt other potentially contentious issues will crop up in the future. We must build on the spirit of partnership that has brought us to this day, to this event. We also have to deal with our national water issues. We have a huge information gap. We haven't done a full inventory of our water, of our nation's water resources for 3 decades. We have serious questions about our long-term supplies. Furthermore, as we have seen the High Plains Aquifer and other subsurface water diminish, we've come to realize that we don't fully understand the relationship between the use of surface and subsurface water. And of course, there continues to be the issue of climate change. I'm determined not to get ensnared in the politics of this issue. The simple fact is, the Earth is warming. We have to figure out how this is getting and going to affect our water supply. We have to come up with an adaptive management approach that will allow us to be good stewards. So let us celebrate the triumphs of 2007. America is proud to be a world leader in many fields. Medicine, agriculture, aerospace, computer technology, engineering among them. With this agreement, the seven states of the Colorado Basin declared the United States to be a world leader in the conservation and sustainable management of water. We've proven that in partnership, in cooperation, we can accomplish great things. We can continue in this spirit as we chart our course for the future and address the challenges that surely lie ahead. It's my honor today to sign the record of decision. But since this reflects the hard work of the seven states, I want to first give an opportunity to a representative of each state to come up and sign a document affirming this historic agreement. Today, you deserve the spotlight. You deserve the applause. I would call forward then, join me up here, from the state of Arizona, Herb Gunther. From the state of California, Bart Fisher. From the state of Colorado, Scott Balcom. From the state of Nevada, Pat Mulroy. The state of New Mexico, Esteban Lopez. The state of Utah, Dennis Strong. The state of Wyoming, Pat Terrell. If you would, in a moment we'll take our seats, and then I'm going to ask Bob Snow, who's played a significant role in this whole effort, if he'll bring that particular document. We will have the states each affix their signature on behalf of their governors and the people of their respective states. I will then attest to that document, and then I will sign the record of decision.